Sophie looked hopelessly up the long flight of stairs. At least there was nobody but soldiers on them. With the luck she was having today, it would not have surprised her to find Michael and Howell on their way down. Since the witch was obviously going to stand there and make sure she went up, Sophie had no choice but to climb them. Up she hobbled, past the sweating soldiers, all the way to the palace entrance again, hating the witch more with every step. She turned round, panting, at the top. The witch was still there, a floating russet shape at the foot, with two small orange figures beside her, waiting to see her thrown out of the palace. "Drat her," said Sophie. She hobbled over to the guards at the archway. Her bad luck still held. There was no sign of Michael or Howell in the reaches beyond. She was forced to say to the guards, "There was something I forgot to tell the king." They remembered her. They let her inside, to be received by a personage in white gloves. And before Sophie had collected her wits, the palace machinery was in motion again, and she was being handed from person to person just like the first time, until she arrived at the same double doors, and the same person in blue was announcing, "Mrs. Pendragon, to see you again, Your Majesty!" It was like a bad dream, Sophie thought, as she went into the same large room. She seemed to have no choice but to blacken Howell's name again. The trouble was, what with all that had happened, and stage fright again into the bargain, her mind was blanker than ever. The king, this time, was standing at a large desk in one corner, rather anxiously moving flags about on a map. He looked up and said pleasantly, "They tell me there was something you forgot to say." "Yes," said Sophie. "Howell says he'll only look for Prince Justin if you promise him your daughter's hand in marriage." "What put that into my head?" she thought. "He'll have us both executed." The king gave her a concerned look.
"Mrs. Pendragon, you must know that's quite out of the question," he said. "I can see you must be very worried about your son to suggest it, but you can't keep him tied to your apron strings forever, you know, and my mind is made up. Please come and sit in this chair. You seem tired."
Sophie tottered to the low chair the king pointed to and sank into it, wondering when the guards would arrive to arrest her. The king looked vaguely around.
"My daughter was here just now," he said.
To Sophie's considerable surprise, he bent down and looked under the desk.
"Valeria," he called.
"Valley, come on out. This way. There's a good girl." There was a shuffling noise. After a second, Princess Valeria shunted herself out from under the desk in sitting position, grinning benignly. She had four teeth, but she was not old enough to have grown a proper head of hair. All she had was a ring of wispy whiteness above her ears. When she saw Sophie, she grinned wider yet and reached out with the hand she had just been sucking and took hold of Sophie's dress. Sophie's dress responded with a spreading wet stain as the princess hauled herself to her feet on it. Staring up into Sophie's face, Valeria addressed a friendly remark to her in what was clearly a private foreign language.
"Oh," said Sophie, feeling an awful fool.
"I understand how a parent feels, Mrs. Pendragon," said the king.
Chapter 14, In Which a Royal Wizard Catches a Cold. Sophie rode back to the castle's Kingsbury entrance in one of the king's coaches, drawn by four horses. On it also were a coachman, a groom, and a footman. A sergeant and six royal troopers went with it to guard it. The reason was Princess Valeria. She had climbed into Sophie's lap. As the coach clattered the short way downhill, Sophie's dress was still covered with the wet marks of Valeria's royal approval. Sophie smiled a little. She thought Martha might have a point after all, wanting children, although 10 Valerias struck her as a bit much. As Valeria had scrambled over her, Sophie remembered hearing that the witch had threatened Valeria in some way, and she found herself saying to Valeria, The witch shan't hurt you. I won't let her. The king had not said anything about that, but he had ordered out a royal coach for Sophie. The equipage drew to a very noisy halt outside the disguised stable. Michael shot out of the door and got in the way of the footman who was helping Sophie down.
"Where did you get to?" he said. "I've been so worried, and Hal's terribly upset."
"I'm sure he is," Sophie said apprehensively.
"Because Mrs. Pentstemon's dead," said Michael.
Hal came to the door too. He looked pale and depressed. He was holding a scroll with red and blue royal seals dangling off it, which Sophie eyed guiltily. Hal gave the sergeant a gold piece and did not say a word until the coach and the troopers had gone clattering away. Then he said,
"I make that 4 horses and 10 men just to get rid of 1 old woman. What did you do to the king?"
Sophie followed Hal and Michael indoors, expecting to find the room covered with green slime, but it wasn't, and there was Calcifer flaring up the chimney, grinning his purple grin. Sophie sank into the chair.
"I think the king got sick of me turning up and blackening your name. I went twice," she said. "Everything went wrong, and I met the witch on her way from killing Mrs. Pentstemon. What a day!"
While Sophie described some of what had happened, Hal leaned on the mantelpiece, dangling the scroll as if he was thinking of feeding it to Calcifer.
"Behold the new royal wizard," he said. "My name is very black."
Then he began to laugh, much to the surprise of Sophie and Michael.
"And what did she do to the Count of Cataract?" he laughed. "I should never have let her near the king."
"I did blacken your name," Sophie protested.
"I know. It was my miscalculation," Hal said. "Now, how am I going to go to poor Mrs. Pentstemon's funeral without the witch knowing? Any ideas, Calcifer?"
It was clear that Hal was far more upset about Mrs. Pentstemon than anything else. Michael was the one who worried about the witch. He confessed next morning that he had had nightmares all night. He had dreamed she came through all the castle entrances at once.
"Where's Hal?" he asked anxiously.
Hal had gone out very early, leaving the bathroom full of the usual scented steam. He had not taken his guitar, and the doorknob was turned to green down. Even Calcifer knew no more than that.
"Don't open the door to anyone," Calcifer said. "The witch knows all about the entrances, except the Porthaven one."
This so alarmed Michael that he fetched some planks from the yard and wedged them crosswise over the door. Then he got to work at last on the spell they had got back from Miss Angorian. Half an hour later, the doorknob turned sharply to black down. The door began to bounce about. Michael clutched at Sophie.
"Don't be afraid," he said shakily. "I'll keep you safe."
The door bounced powerfully for a while, then it stopped. Michael had just let go of Sophie in great relief when there came a violent explosion. The planks clattered to the floor, Calcifer plunged to the bottom of the grate, and Michael plunged into the broom cupboard, leaving Sophie standing there as the door burst open and Hal stormed in.
"This is a bit much, Sophie," he said. "I do live here."
He was soaking wet. The grey and scarlet suit was black and brown. His sleeves and the ends of his hair were dripping. Sophie looked at the doorknob, still turned to black down. Miss Angorian, she thought. And he went to see her in that charmed suit.
"Where have you been?" she said.
Hal sneezed.
"Standing in the rain. None of your business," he said hoarsely. "What were those planks in aid of?"
"I did them," Michael said, edging out of the broom cupboard. "The witch..."
"You must think I don't know my business," Hal said irritably. "I have so many misdirection spells out that most people wouldn't find us at all. I give even the witch 3 days. Calcifer, I need a hot drink."
Calcifer had been climbing up among his logs, but as Hal went over to the fireplace, he plunged down again.
"Don't come near me like that. You're wet," he hissed.
"Sophie,"
Howell said pleadingly. Sophie folded her arms pitilessly.
What about Letty? She said.
I'm soaked through, said Howell. I should have a hot drink.
And I said, what about Letty Hatter? Sophie said.
Bother you then, said Howell. He shook himself. The water fell off him in a neat ring on the floor. Howell stepped out of it with his hair gleaming dry and his suit grey and scarlet and not even damp, and went to fetch the saucepan.
The world is full of hard-hearted women, Michael, he said. I can name three without stopping to think.
One of them being Miss Angorian? Asked Sophie.
Howell didn't answer. He ignored Sophie grandly for the rest of the morning, while he discussed moving the castle with Michael and Calcifer. Howell really was going to run away, just as she had warned the king he would, Sophie thought, as she sat and sewed more triangles of blue and silver suit together. She knew she must get Howell out of that grey and scarlet suit as soon as possible.
I don't think we need move the Porthaven entrance, Howell said.
He conjured himself a handkerchief out of the air and blew his nose with a hoot which made Calcifer flicker uneasily.
But I want the moving castle well away from anywhere it's been before and the Kingsbury entrance shut down.
Someone knocked on the door then. Sophie noticed that Howell jumped and looked round as nervously as Michael. Neither of them answered the door.
Coward, Sophie thought scornfully.
She wondered why she had gone to all that trouble for Howell yesterday.
I must have been mad, she muttered to the blue and silver suit. What about the black down entrance? Michael asked, when the person knocking seemed to have gone away.
That stays, Howell said, and conjured himself another handkerchief with a final sort of flick.
It would, Sophie thought. Miss Angorian is outside it. Poor Letty.
By the middle of the morning, Howell was conjuring handkerchiefs in twos and threes. They were floppy squares of paper, really, Sophie saw. He kept sneezing. His voice grew hoarser. He was conjuring handkerchiefs by the half dozen soon. Ashes from the used ones were piled all round Calcifer.
Oh, why is it that whenever I go to Wales, I always come back with a cold?
Howell croaked and conjured himself a whole wad of tissues.
Sophie snorted. Did you say something? Howell croaked.
No, but I was thinking that people who run away from everything deserve every cold they get, Sophie said. People who are appointed to do something by the king and go courting in the rain instead have only themselves to blame.
You don't know everything I do, Mrs. Moralizer, Howell said. Want me to write out a list before I go out another time? I have looked for Prince Justin. Courting isn't the only thing I do when I go out.
When have you looked? Said Sophie.
Oh, how your ears flap and your long nose twitches, Howell croaked. I looked when he first disappeared, of course. I was curious to know what Prince Justin was doing up this way when everyone knew Solomon had gone to the waste. I think someone must have sold him a dud-finding spell, because he went right over into the Folding Valley and bought another from Mrs. Fairfax, and that fetched him back this way fairly naturally, where he stopped at the castle, and Michael sold him another finding spell and a disguise spell.
Michael's hand went over his mouth.
Was that man in the green uniform Prince Justin?
Yes. But I didn't mention the matter before, said Howell, because the king might have thought you should have had the sense to sell him another dud. I had a conscience about it.
Conscience. Notice that word, Mrs. Longnose. I had a conscience.
Howell conjured another wad of handkerchiefs and glowered at Sophie over them out of eyes that were now red-rimmed and watery. Then he stood up.
I feel ill, he announced. I'm going to bed, where I may die.
He tottered piteously to the stairs.
Bury me beside Mrs. Pentstemon, he croaked as he went up them to bed.
Sophie applied herself to her sewing harder than ever.
Here was her chance to get the grey and scarlet suit off Hal before it did more damage to Miss Angorian's heart. Unless, of course, Hal went to bed in his clothes, which she didn't put past him. So Hal must have been looking for Prince Justin when he went to Upper Folding and met Letty. Poor Letty, Sophie thought, putting brisk tiny stitches round her 57th blue triangle. Only another 40 or so to go. Hal's voice was presently heard shouting weakly, "Help me, someone! I'm dying from neglect up here!" Sophie snorted. Michael left off working on his new spell and ran up and down stairs. Things became very restless. In the time it took Sophie to sew 10 more blue triangles, Michael ran upstairs with lemon and honey, with a particular book, with cough mixture, with a spoon to take the cough mixture with, and then with nose drops, throat pastels, gargle, pen, paper, 3 more books, and an infusion of willow bark. People kept knocking at the door, too, making Sophie jump and calcifer flicker uneasily. When no one opened the door, some of the people went on hammering for 5 minutes or so, rightly thinking they were being ignored. By this time, Sophie was becoming worried about the blue and silver suit. It was getting smaller and smaller. One cannot sew in that number of triangles without taking up quite a lot of cloth in the seams. "Michael," she said, when Michael came rushing downstairs again because Hal fancied a bacon sandwich for lunch. "Michael, is there a way of making small clothes larger?"
"Oh, yes," said Michael. "That's just what my new spell is, when I get a chance to work on it. He wants 6 slices of bacon in the sandwich. Could you ask Calcifer?"
Sophie and Calcifer exchanged speaking looks.
"I don't think he's dying," Calcifer said.
"I'll give you the rinds to eat if you bend your head down," Sophie said, laying down her sewing. It was easier to bribe Calcifer than bully him. They had bacon sandwiches for lunch, but Michael had to rush upstairs in the middle of eating his. He came down with the news that Hal wanted him to go into Market Chipping now to get some things he needed for moving the castle.
"But the witch, is it safe?" Sophie asked.
Michael licked bacon grease off his fingers and dived into the broom cupboard. He came out with one of the dusty velvet cloaks slung round his shoulders. At least, the person who came out wearing the cloak was a burly man with a red beard. This person licked his fingers and said with Michael's voice, "Hal thinks I'll be safe enough like this. It's misdirection as well as disguise. I wonder if Letty will know me." The burly man opened the door green down and jumped out onto the slowly moving hills. Peace descended. Calcifer settled and chinked. Hal had evidently realized that Sophie was not going to run about after him. There was silence upstairs. Sophie got up and cautiously hobbled to the broom cupboard. This was her chance to go and see Letty. Letty must be very miserable by now. Sophie was fairly sure Hal had not been near her since that day in the orchard. It might just do some good if Sophie were to tell her that her feelings were caused by a charmed suit. Anyway, she owed it to Letty to tell her. The 7-league boots were not in the cupboard. Sophie could not believe it at first. She turned everything out, and there was nothing there but ordinary buckets, brooms, and the other velvet cloak. "Drat the man!" Sophie exclaimed. Howl had obviously made sure she would not follow him anywhere again. She was putting everything back into the cupboard when someone knocked at the door. Sophie, as usual, jumped and hoped they would go away. But this person seemed more determined than most. Whoever it was went on knocking, or perhaps hurling him or herself at the door, for the sound was more a steady whomp, whomp, whomp than proper knocking. After 5 minutes, they were still doing it. Sophie looked at the uneasy green flickers, which were all she could see of Calcifer. "Is it the witch?"
"No," said Calcifer, muffled among his logs. "It's the castle door. Someone must be running along beside us. We're going quite fast."
"Is it the Scarecrow?" Sophie asked, and her chest gave a tremor at the mere idea.
"It's flesh and blood," Calcifer said. His blue face climbed up into the chimney, looking puzzled. "I'm not sure what it is, except that it wants to come in badly. I don't think it means any harm."